fine-tuned ability to identify threats to both instinct and learning. Experiments suggest that young birds may be genetically wired to avoid risks, but they need to watch experienced birds in action to refine their know-how. By watching their parents in the act of mobbing, youngsters gain critical knowledge that may save their own skin. So, when a mobbing flock of crows teams up on an eagle, they're not only drawing attention and chasing off a potential danger, they may also be giving young crows an important lesson in bird identification. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Did you know you can listen to Bird Note in your podcast app? Subscribe to Bird Note Daily and never miss an episode.
We're from the Kiwassa Preteen Spring Camp. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.
Peter Jones, and you are indeed listening to Tell Us a Tale, where Jen Hoffman and I are going to tell you a couple of tales about the little guy coming out on top, starting with an Irish one called Clever Tom and the Leprechaun, adapted by Linda Shute, and that's published by Lothrop, Lee and Shepherd.
One fine day, on Lady Day in the Harvest, Tom Fitzpatrick took a ramble down the lane.
Oh, dear.
He heard through the hedge, so Tom tiptoed closer to take a look.
What could that be?
The clacking sound stopped when Tom peeped through the bushes and in the shadow. What did he see? Why, a big gallon pitcher and a teeny tiny man with a brown leather apron and a three-cornered hat.
What could that be?
Up the small man climbed on his wee wooden stool and dipped his little piggin into the crock. Then he settled down with his full mug beside him to hammer on the heel of a fairy-sized shoe.
By the powers, I believe that's a leprechaun. Why, if I catch him and if I scare him, he'll give me his gold. Since I'm a clever fellow, that ought to be simple. Before the sun sets, I'll have me fortune made.
So Tom stared at the leprechaun and tried not to blink. He knew that if he looked away, the old man would escape. Then he crept up quite near and tipped his hat, politely saying,
"Good day to your neighbour. Blessings on your work."
"Thank you kindly."
But the small one, he never looked up. He just kept on tapping at the heel piece of the brogue.
"Oh, why, today's a holiday. You shouldn't have to work that hard."
"Oh, if I do, that's my business and none of your own. Instead of pestering me, young man, you ought to be watching your father's fields. Look there, the cows have broken out into the oats. See, they're knocking the corn all about."
Cows in the corn. Oh, wait a minute. I'm not going to be fooled by that leprechaun trick. No, I've got you. Now you're me prisoner. Now tell me, where is your gold, leprechaun?"
I'm just a poor man there, Tom. Please let go of me."
"You and I both know that you're lying. Don't you be lying to me."
Very well. Tom Fitzpatrick, you're too clever for me. I see that you're after me buried treasure, so I'll just have to show you where it is hid."
"All right, then let's go now."
And with his bitty eye on his bitty man, and had the little man locked in his fist, Tom followed where the leprechaun led him. He traipsed over a hill, and under some hedges, and through a ditch, and across a peat bog. At last, just when Tom feared he'd been hoodwinked, he found himself in a great field of weeds.
"Dig right there. Deep under that pullion bush is where I put my gold, Tom Fitzpatrick."
"Thunderation, I need to fetch me spade. But when I return, I'll be lost. There got to be 40 acres of bullion bushes out here, and each one of those plants, they look just like the other. Oh dear, what am I going to do now?"
Still watching the leprechaun, Tom figured out a plan. He tied his bright red garter on the bush.
"I swear, here, you old rascal, that you won't take this off while I run back to get my shovel."
"Oh, that I promise you. I wouldn't lie to you."
"Oh, right. That's right. Leprechauns, they always keep their word, so you better not be lying to me."
"No, since I have shown you where my treasure is, Tom Fitzgerald, I don't suppose you'll be needing me anymore."
"No, my fortune's made. You may go, and good luck go with you."
"Then goodbye, Tom Fitzpatrick. May you do much good with what you find."
And away Tom ran, as fast as he could run, figuring how he'd spend the gold. And then back he came, with his shovel in his hand, back to the field of the bullion. But when he got there, lo and behold, a garter just like his own was tied to each and every bush as far as he could see.
"Oh, Chloe, what am I going to do?
Tom dug under the bullion where he thought he tied his garter. But nothing was buried under that bush. And so he dug under another. And he dug to the east, and he dug to the west, and still he found no treasure. The harvest moon rose as he dug to the north, and it set as he dug southward.
Oh, dear me.
When the sun came up, Tom saw he dug 100 holes, and tired, Tom Fitzpatrick knew he couldn't find that gold, so he gave up and headed for home. From then on, Tom always carried his spade, and he never stopped listening for a tapping in the field. Every chance he got, he'd tell how he nearly found the gold.
"And since I'm a clever fellow, the next time I catch that leprechaun, I'll have me fortunes made."
Well now, ain't this an elegant neighborhood? All the residents dress so fine. One day off the boat am I, with a job that's nearly mine. 'Tis a job with an elegant millionaire and his elegant family. Today I move from immigrant to high society. Now you may call that luck, and you may call it fortune, but me, myself, I call it fortuosity. Fortuosity, that's me byword. Fortuosity, me a twinkle in the eye word. Sometimes castles fall to the ground, but that's where four-leaf clovers abound. Fortuosity, lucky chances, fortuitous little happy happenstances. I don't worry, 'cause everywhere I see that every bit of life is lit by fortuity.
Disney's The Happiest Millionaire, that was Tommy Steele singing Fortuosity. You are listening to Tell Us a Tale.
We're from the Kiwassa Preteen Spring Camp. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.
Well, for our next tale about the little guy coming out on top, we're going to tell you one of my favorites from the Brothers Grimm called Seven at One Blow, retold by Jay Williams, and that's published by Parents Magazine Press.
It all began with a pot of jam. Pipkin the tailor was sewing a suit. It was a fine June day.
Jam, a bread and jam for a summer lunch.
He went into the kitchen. He spread a slice of bread and began to eat. Then in through the window came the flies, drawn by the sweet smell of jam. One landed on his nose. He swatted at it. Another tickled the top of his head. He killed it. But more flies were buzzing about him, trying for a taste of his jam. The little tailor picked up a piece of cloth. He waited until a number of flies had settled on the table. Then, with one smack of the cloth, he squashed them.
Seven, seven, et bleu! No one in the village has ever done such a deed.
He was so pleased with himself that he got out some leather and some red and yellow cloth. He stitched and he sewed, and when he was done, he had a belt on which were the words,
Seven at One Blow. Oh, this place is too small for a bold man like me. I must leave it and go in search of my fortune.
He began to pack. He didn't have much. He packed his scissors and some socks, two handkerchiefs and a tape measure. He put a piece of cheese in one pocket, and in the other pocket he put his canary, because the cage was too big to carry. Then he shut the door behind him and started off into the world to find his fortune. After a long time, he came to the land of Baron Battlesmere. When he walked into the town, people stared and pointed at his belt. Soon the Baron himself came riding down to meet Pipkin.
Greetings, you are just the man I am looking for.
I am? How nice for you?
Seven at one blow. Splendid, incredible. A great reward is waiting for you.
It is?
And all you have to do is one little deed, even smaller than killing seven at a blow. In the forest, there is a giant who is pulling up all our trees and using them for firewood. Go and get rid of him, and the reward is yours.
But...
Good! He agrees!
The people all rushed forward, picked up Pipkin, and carried him on their shoulders out of the town, up the hill to the edge of the forest, and there they left him. Pipkin picked himself up and dusted himself off.
Well, I may as well go and see what the giant looks like. I know the giants are big, but they are also very stupid, I think. Perhaps I think I can get the best of him. I think so.
He set off walking through the woods, and soon he came to the edge of a clearing. There on the ground sat a giant. He was three times as high as Pipkin, and he was eating a sandwich. Next to him was an oak tree, which he had pulled up by the roots.
Oh, who are you?
Do you see this belt? I am he, a kid, seven at one blow. I have come to ask you to stop pulling up all of Baron Battlesmere's trees.
Oh, you miserable mite. Do you know who you are talking to? I am Giant Grim.
He picked up a rock, and holding it on the palm of one hand, he hit it with the other, and it split in two.
Oh, I don't think so much of that. Watch this.
And Pipkin slipped the piece of cheese out of his pocket and pretended to pick it up from the ground as if it were a stone. Holding it on the palm of one hand, he hit it with his fist. It mashed flat and fell to bits.
Oh, watch this.
The giant picked up another rock and threw it into the air. Up it went until it was almost out of sight, and then it fell with a thump.
I don't think that's very good. Watch this.
Pipkin took the canary out of his other pocket and pretended to pick it up from the ground as if it were a stone. He threw it into the air. Up it went, higher and higher, until it had vanished altogether.
You are more of a man than I took you for. Well, come on home with me, and we will talk things over. Just help me carry this tree.
Certainly, for you I'll help. You carry the roots, and I carry the branches, which are bigger after all.
The giant picked up the tree and held it over his shoulder by the roots. Pipkin jumped into the branches where the giant couldn't see him, and there he sat comfortably.
Are you ready?
Go ahead. I'm holding my hand up.
And away went the giant, carrying the tree, Pipkin and all. Soon they came to the giant's house. There, Pipkin hopped down from the branches.
Aren't you tired?
Not a bit. I could do this all day.
They went inside, and the giant showed Pipkin a bed as big as a tennis court.
I am going to take a nap before dinner. You take a nap as well.
Very well.
Pipkin jumped into the bed, but as soon as the giant had gone, he jumped out again.
This bed is far too big for me.
He rolled up his coat and put it under the blanket. Then he curled up in a dark corner. Soon the giant came tiptoeing into the room. It was like a horse tiptoeing. In one hand he held an iron bar.
Seven at a blow. I will have to destroy this fellow before he can harm me. He is stronger than I thought.
The giant lifted the bar and hit the bed just where Pipkin's coat lay, and with a crash, the bed broke in half.
That finishes him.
And with that, the giant went into the kitchen and began to fry an elephant for lunch. In walked Pipkin.
Hello. A mosquito just bit me and woke me up. When do we eat?
With a scream of fright, the giant rushed out of the house and away and never was seen again. Pipkin went back to the town of Baron Battlesmere. When the Baron heard that Giant Grim was gone, he gave Pipkin a horse, a bag of gold, and a medal. Everyone applauded as Pipkin rode on his way again. Soon he came to the land of Lady Lurgan. When he rode into the town, he was greeted by cheers, and Lady Lurgan herself came to meet him.
Baron Battlesmere has sent a message to me about you. You are just the man I am looking for.
No,
don't be modest. We all know about your bold deeds. Just go to the riverbank. There you will find the giant who is catching all my fish. Get rid of him, and you shall be rewarded.
Oh, well, I suppose I'd better try. Big is strong, but maybe small is smarter. I'll see what I can do.
Off he went to the banks of a wide, swift river. There he saw a giant who was so big that Pipkin barely came up to his knees. He was fishing from the shore with a rod that had 50 lines on it, and each line had 10 hooks. When he saw Pipkin, he put down the rod.
I have come to ask you to stop fishing in this river.
You meddlesome midget. Do you know who I am? I am Giant Grum.
Why is that so? Do you see this belt? I am he who killed 7 at a blow, and I chased away Giant Grim.
The giant turned a little pale, and in a quieter voice that sounded like gravel being poured out of a bucket, he said,
"Let's not quarrel. Sit down and fish with me, and we will talk things over. I think the first chance I get, I will push him into the river."
Excuse me, but I need a fishing rod. Just bend this big tree over so that I can get hold of the top and pull it up, all right?
The giant bent the tree and Pipkin seized a branch.
Let go now.
When the giant let go, the tree snapped up straight. It flung Pipkin into the air and high he sailed right over the river and landed on the other shore.
Hey, what did you do that for?
Well, the fishing is better over here. Just jump over the way I did.
If you can do it, so can
he took 2 giant steps and gave a great leap, but he was so big and heavy that he couldn't jump far. He landed in the middle of the river with a splash. Well, giants cannot swim. When Pipkin returned to the town, he was treated as a hero. Lady Lurgan gave him a splendid suit of clothes, 2 bags of gold, and a hat with an ostrich feather. When Pipkin rode away, everyone cheered. Soon he came to the city where the queen lived. He was met by soldiers who took him to the palace, and there sat the queen.
Bonjour.
Your majesty?
Oui. Baron Battersmere and Lady Lurgan have sent us messages about you.
Oh, really?
You are the champion we need.
Thank you, Your Majesty.
There is a small task for you here.
Of course there is.
If you do it, and you shall have half the kingdom and the hand of my daughter in marriage.
Oh?
There stood the princess beside the throne. She was as fresh and lovely as a May morning, and when she smiled, Pipkin felt dizzy.
What is the task, Your Majesty?
One that will be very easy for a man like you.
Okay.
Go to the broad meadows beyond the city. There you will see Giant Cram.
Oh, dear.
He has been standing there for 6 days, trying to make up his mind, for giants, as you know, are very, very slow.
Your Majesty, make up his mind about what?
Whether to stamp on our city or jump on it.
Oh.
And he will decide any day now, so you... please, had better get rid of him at once.
Very well, Your Majesty. For you and the princess, I will see what I can do.
Merci.
I will see.
Okay. He rode to the broad meadows beyond the city. There stood Giant Grim, leaning on an iron club as big as a church steeple. He was so big that the little tailor only came up to the soles of his boots.
Mon Dieu.
Pipkin tipped back his head and shouted as loudly as he could.
Ah, and he who killed seven at a blow. El Shasta, El Giant Grim, and El Giant Grah!
But the giant was so big that he didn't hear him. He didn't even know Pipkin was there. He just went on standing with his mouth open, trying to make up his mind. Pipkin sat down on a stump.
Oh dear, I will never manage this one. How I wish I had never opened that jar of jam in the first place.
Then suddenly he remembered how it had all begun. He jumped up and snapped his fingers, for an idea had come to him. He rode back to the city as fast as he could. There he bought a long, strong, but slender rope, a hook, a knapsack, and 22 jars of jam. Then he galloped back to the meadow. He packed everything in the knapsack. Then he began to climb the giant. He climbed up the laces of the giant's boots until he came to the giant's socks. He climbed up the thick socks until he came to the giant's trousers. They were rough and wrinkly, and up he went, humming to himself. He then came to the giant's coat. It was a shaggy, furry coat and very easy to climb. When he got to a pocket, he sat on the edge of it and rested. After a bit, he started on again. He climbed the rest of the coat and came out on the giant's shoulder.
Oh, so much cleaning.
The giant had long, bristly hair that hung down to his collar, and Pipkin shinnied up one of the hairs to the top of the giant's ear.
Oh.
From there, he climbed another tuft of hair until he was standing on the giant's head.
Oh,
it was like standing in a field of tall, thick weeds. Softly and lightly, he walked to the center of the giant's head. He got out the jam and emptied all the jars. He put the empty jars back in the knapsack. He tied the hook to the end of the rope. He climbed down the giant's hair to his collar, hooked the hook in the collar, and slid quietly down to the ground. Soon, bees and wasps began to buzz around the giant's head. The flies joined them. First by dozens, then by hundreds they came. They landed on the jam and sipped it, buzzing hungrily. The giant fidgeted. He stamped his feet. He gave a terrible roar of annoyance and slapped at his head with all his might, but he had forgotten that he was holding an iron club in his hand. Giants are really very stupid. Went the club, and down crashed Giant Graham with a noise like 33 earthquakes, and that was the end of him. When Pipkin told the news to the queen, all the bells in the city rang and everyone danced in the streets. The queen put the princess's hand in Pipkin's.
But I must tell you, I am not a knight or a nobleman. I am just a tailor.
No, you are he who killed seven at a blow and chased away Giant Grim and drowned Giant Grom and slew Giant Graham. And that's good enough for moi.
Oh, I'm so happy.
And so they were married that very day. Everybody sat down at long tables and ate and drank whatever they liked for 3 whole days. And of course, there was plenty of jam.
And the background of Seven at One Blow was Largo from Vivaldi's Concerto in D Major, off John Bullard's album Bach on the Banjo. Well, in the spirit of this week's show, we are going to close out this edition of Tell Us a Tale with a tune off Gunnar Madsen's album Old Mr. Macclehackle called I'm a Little Twerp. So we'll see you again soon, right here at Tell Us a Tale.
I'm a little twerp. 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 And I'm messing around in your hair. I like to steal your chewing gum. I like to break your pencils. In class I make you giggle, so you'll get in trouble with Mrs. Grenzels. I like to laugh when you make mistakes. When we play a game, I win. You always say I cheat, and I always rub it in.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.